Chapter 19. Clado is hunting. This is something he enjoys, being cut loose, away from the slow-moving mass of the warband's forces, and out, almost on his own. He takes only 6 of the Unbroken with him, ones less weighed down with gifts and lighter on their hooves. Together, they fight their way around the margins, ignoring the set-piece actions where the tanks thunder, worming their way higher, narrower, further. Clado has some art here. He is not just a flenser of muscle and an unpicker of veins. He can create mists that confuse, generate fogs that blind. This is not proper sorcery, nor a real and solid grasp of the greater principles of the warp, but a minor and fleeting understanding of optics, of frail psychologies, of the disarming properties of the whisper and the moment of doubt. Such things do not work on the corpse spawn of the Emperor, of course. Space Marines must be fought when they cannot be eluded, and the warriors of this place prove as irritatingly efficient as any Clado has ever encountered. His squad of 7 is now down to 4, and they have only managed to kill 1 of the enemy in return. Were it not for the intervention of warriors of the Weeping Veil during 1 episode on an exposed transit span, they might have all been killed. They slipped off after that, leaving the zealots to fight on. A shameful action, it might be thought, and one at odds with the philosophies of the old legion. Clado is not, he knows, a very fine example of Mortarian's gene breed. He is too individual, too wedded to moral shadows. He has no faith, not really, just an appreciation for what his station and learning allow him to do. Vaux seems to understand this, and so the command he has been given here, to rove ahead and locate the master of the fortress, suits all concerned. The invaders are advancing freely now. He can hear the tidal crash of combat echoing down every corridor, swelling up like water against the sluices. This citadel is overrun, strangled from every direction, smothered by the weight of the forces sent against it. Clado still cannot quite believe that there are so few corpse-spawn left here, and can only guess that the apocalypse must have overtaken them. He pauses, kneeling and resting his bolt pistol on the floor in front of him. His 3 companions halt in the gloom, respiring softly through their battered and pocked vox grills. Clado sniffs. The air is pungent, not just with fear and spilled blood, but with something else. Something familiar. Something delightful. Gene seed. Vials and vials of it, ranked in vaults, kept at the optimum temperature, secured behind glittering stasis fields. He should have known they were getting close. This is one of the central hubs, a grand octagonal tower that the enemy fought hard to retain. It must be killing them to know that it will fall in its entirety soon. There is vicious fighting all across the lower layers now, the confusion of it allowing Clado and his quiet band to slither ahead of the game. Clado finds himself salivating. He creeps forward, scanning ahead. Just around a sharp corner, there is an open hallway, scorched and raked with bullet holes, littered with bodies piled high. Halfway down that hall, set in the right-hand wall, there is an opening, a pair of bolter-blown doors. Light spills from the jagged edges, antiseptic bright amid all the murk. He can see the faint, very rapid strobe flicker of lumens. He can smell the chemicals more strongly. They smell the same wherever you find them, these caches. They are prescribed like that, by Mars, and they never vary. Clado amuses himself by thinking that in all of these strong points, even on Chogoris, even on Fenris, there will be a chamber just like this, a little sliver of the Tech Priest's domains lodged in every monastery of every kind. At heart, the Imperials understand just what Clado understands, that the body is just another machine to be tinkered with and extended and stretched out. They have not yet grasped the opposite truth, most of them, that machines are really just like bodies too, and that it is actually very simple to blur the line the other way, should you have the inclination to do so. For a moment, he thinks the way to the vault is open. He creeps forward again, coming up from his crouch, and the scent of all those lined-up vials makes his stomach grumble. Oh, such joys to be had with the contents of those glass cylinders! Oh, such wonders to be performed! Then he freezes. At the far end of the hallway, something is moving, heedless of stealth, rushing back from another fight. In an instant, Plato knows he has found what he has been hunting. This one is greater than the rest, with a crested helm and grime-spattered armor. He carries a thunder hammer, though the energy field has been extinguished somehow. It is caked with burned black blood. Two others come with him, retainers by their look. They are also battle-ravaged, covered in the visible signs of hard combat, and they carry notched blades. All three stride through the evidence of destruction, hurrying to make the shattered gateway, to shore up this last defense for just a little longer. Plato opens the secure channel to Vaux. He uses the device Vaux himself gave him, the one that cuts through the hiss and muffle, and speaks directly.
Target located. We'll engage, but you may need to be swift. There are treats here, and I am eager to gather them.
Then he is charging, his warriors coming with him. The white consuls are moving too, a little faster, their movements a little more motivated by anger, by that edge of desperation that comes before destruction. By the time the first blow comes in, Plato is almost giggling.
This is going to be horrible,
he thinks, just as always. Vaux watches it all unfold. Thus far, he has not lifted his scythe in anger. He watches the citadel burn, and it gives him no pleasure. He came in on the Thunderhawk Thar. He saw from high altitude the rings of fire around the entire place, which he knows from history is called Vigilia Carceris. He knows that it has been the seat of power in this subsector for the duration of the Long War, and that it has been an exemplary model of the Imperial governing pattern. There is much to admire in that pattern, for all that Vaux thinks it misguided. The measure of an enemy is not whether you agree with them, for there are a thousand species of disagreement, but whether they live out their philosophy with integrity. That is why he despises the Thousand Sons, for they lie to themselves about what they do and who they are. But he has never sneered at another soul, ally or enemy, who faced the truth of the universe as they understood it, and did not shrink from the consequences. The white consuls, to the best of his knowledge, were of the latter breed. They made their home on the cliff edge, peering like falcons into the turning gyre below. More than most chapters of the Imperium, they knew the balance of madness that motivates the warp. They could have stationed themselves somewhere more remote, even close to the petty empire of their dead Primarch, and thus lived a few centuries longer. That they didn't, and chose this eternal vigilance poised atop the seeds of their doom, is something to admire. Vaux watches the noose slip tight. He processes the streams of lumen blotch data brought to him from a thousand scattered biomech flies. He senses the harmonics of struggle and defiance. He listens to 100 Vaux streams at once, filtering them with his old subtle mind. A painting emerges, a piece of gaudy art, endlessly changing, fixed around clustered points of incoming statistics. He watches the apostles of the Weeping Veil as they fight, and cannot suppress a mite of distaste. It is an effective strategy, this terror-causing, this pain-worship, and yet it leaves him cold. He knows why they do it, as Philemon told him, assuming he didn't already know. The warp is thinning fast over the citadel, and the presences on the other side are already swimming closer. The more the apostles generate anguish, the quicker they will achieve their goal. Just as Slurt predicted, they are already diverting forces to the catacombs, sacrificing a fraction of speed in order to reap a harvest of another kind. He watches the Lords of Silence take the brunt of the main assault in the higher towers. He observes Dragon leading the most effective inroads, making the best use of Naum he has ever seen. The gallowsman has so many gifts, he thinks, so much raw talent. He watches the rings of defences crumble and implode one by one, each level fought over bitterly. He sees clouds of pestilence rise from the burning earth, worming their way under the environment masks of the enemy soldiers. He sees the consuls rally, again and again, clinging to every strong point with that damnable determination. Even when they are encircled by the choking fires of their own burnt dead, cut off, beaten back, they come at the invaders still. They empty their bolters and exhaust the power units on their lasguns, then reach for blades. Their disruptors blow, their steel is notched, and then they clench their fists. Such power of belief, thinks Vorks, such blind, impressive, ill-directed belief. Soon he can take the Thunderhawk in closer to the heart of it, dipping between spires that all glow from inner burning. The atmosphere is a poison now, a slough of physoline and promethium, thick as the sullen seas that seethe beyond the cliff edge. Fuel dumps must have been hit somewhere, sending churning walls of red-black filth rolling through every chink of open space, staining the stone to darkness, making the entire citadel a bitter, guttering candle. Carcasses are lumped in open courtyards, some already bursting with the tiny phage creatures that will soon spill across the entire planet. Ahead of him, embedded in ruined rockcrete battlements, he sees the skeleton of a gunship, its bones carbon dark and still smoking thickly. In the distant street levels below, tanks are toppled like children's toys, their tracks twisted into ribbons. A few war standards still flutter weakly from balconies, torn and threadbare. The Aquilas, those most enduring symbols of the corpse emperor, have been smashed and ground underfoot. Vorks draws closer to the great rib towers with their gothic eaves and domed pinnacles. He sees the pockets of remaining resistance, islands now in this storm of ruin. And it is only then, buoyed on the hot currents of the city pyre, drifting amid the embers of a crumbling empire, that he hears from Clado at last. Clado. Cunning Clado. Sent ahead to isolate the greatest of the warriors within this collapsing fortress, the one soul destined to die at Vorks's own hand. Vorks even knows his name. Saimar Zidius, who has already served for centuries, and will die as he has lived, unyielding, spitting defiance, carrying himself with that maddening, error-strewn dignity. The Tha is turned towards the signal. Vorks does not hurry. Clado will be fighting by now. Set against the foe, he has no chance of besting. The Thunderhawk booms its way under the parapets of the inner citadel, angling to avoid its smoke-streamed walls. The gunship reaches a high balustrade scattered with blown brickwork and hovers on its smoggy turbines. Vorks stirs himself, reaches for exact, and departs the gunship, leaping heavily from the juddering platform. His 12 bodyguards come with him, all in Tartarus plate, carrying cleavers, mauls, and morning stars, all dragging themselves through their own mires of entrail-spilling gifts. Clado voxes again.
Getting difficult. Haste appreciated.
The surgeon's voice is strained. Vorks does not hurry. Instead, he watches. The device he gave Clado is not, as the surgeon imagines, a simple combead. It has the eyeball of a demon locked within its lead heart, plucked from the beautiful face of a keeper of secrets and slave to Vorks's patient will. When the siege master closes his eyes, he sees the world through Clado's position, his vantage swinging from the amulet set about Clado's neck. Thus, Vorks has the leisure to witness Zidius's last great kill. Even as Vorks sends his bodyguards off to seal the chambers beyond and prevent any interruptions, he sees the White Consul's chaptermaster hurl the Thunderhammer into Clado's midriff, smashing the ceramite and twisting the shards deep into puckered skin. He sees the lesser warriors grapple around the two titans, neutralizing one another and succumbing to their own necessary deaths. In truth, though, Zidius is the only one there who matters. He is as magnificent as Vorks hoped he would be, and he far outclasses Clado. The mismatch is almost embarrassing. Zidius bludgeons Clado, cracking him back a pace, then again, with two reverse sweeps of the hammer. Clado tries to fire at him, close range, and has his gun hand mangled for his trouble. Zidius is enraged, of course, calling out to his emperor with every strike. The fury is incandescent and generates its own strange, intangible aura of kinetic power. Clado's cynicism has no purchase on this, and so he is smashed back again, slamming into the wall at his back, his corroded power pack dented amid plumes of kicked-out dust. Still, Vaux does not hurry. He enters the antechambers leading to the gene vaults and treads over still warm bodies, white consuls and death guard, space marines and unbroken. Now he is close enough to hear the real echoing cracks and slams of combat, though there are still a few doorways to traverse. The others in that place are soon dead, all but the two who concern him. Zidius loses his companions, but so does Clado. The chapter master has proved enough for all of them. Now he is closing on the retreating surgeon with the light of retribution in his blood-stained helm lenses.
"Where are you?"
Clado pants, working hard just to stay alive. Vaux maintains his steady pace. He sees Zidius smash Clado's helm open, exposing that narrow, eroded face. He sees Zidius land a heavy punch, shattering Clado's shoulder, then follow with a one-handed swing of the thunderhammer that lifts Clado up and hurls him across the blood-pooled floor. Vaux crosses the last threshold just in time to see, with his real eyes, Zidius grab Clado by the neck guard and haul his limp body back up, only to slam it down again. The chapter master raises a boot and stamps imperiously on Clado's exposed face, crunching bone.
"Enough!"
says Vaux, steadying himself and brandishing exact. Zidius whirls to face the newcomer. The chamber floor around him is clustered with corpses, like some lost battlefield on some lost barbarian world. The few remaining lumens gutter and swing, fizzing with sparks. The destroyed doorway to the gene seed vaults lies open still, and the chapter master stands before it. Clado, what remains of him, twitches weakly. Vaux can see that Zidius is exhausted. He has already killed so many, fighting for hours, standing before the combined power of two legions and pouring all his defiance out at them. His weapon has been rendered defunct, his armor is pitted and broken, and still he walks, keeping himself erect, maintaining that rolling, menacing gait that is the natural consequence of so much remorseless physical conditioning.
"Go back!"
Zidius threatens Vaux, raising the thunderhammer. His voice is cracking a little, but still strong.
"Go back to the hell you came from!"
That would not be difficult. The entire galaxy is now turning into that very same hell, in these regions at least.
"Know this,"
Vaux says in his archaic Gothic, trying his best to be readily understandable.
"Your chapter's gene seed will be destroyed by my hand. None will be taken. None will be defiled."
By now, Zidius is running. He throws himself, body and soul, into the first strike. His thunderhammer smacks hard into exact, and the blow is shuddering, one that even Vaux has to work hard to brace against.
"Traitor!"
Zidius hisses, his voice distorted by the distilled venom of the betrayed.
"The bodies of your warriors will not be mutilated,"
Vaux continues quietly, throwing Zidius off and ramming the scythe's heel at him.
"Those taken alive will have honorable deaths."
Zidius is fast. He is powerful, intelligent, and precise. Another strike cracks exact away, and the chapter master powers into the opened gap, landing a gauntleted punch on Vaux's breastplate.
"The throne endures!"
Zidius roars.
"Terror endures!"
Vaux has to battle harder now. Containing this inferno is difficult.
"The names of the slain will be recorded," he says, straining to match the heft and velocity of the thunderhammer's strikes. "That is a kind of immortality, a better kind than the one you were promised."
They rock and swing around one another. Vaux is the greater in stature, a swollen creature of the god, and Zidius has to push himself to the limit just to make contact. The chapter master is already wounded from many earlier fights. Vaux can see the infections pulsing their way around his body, but somehow it doesn't slow him.
"The light will come again," Zidius thunders.
And that, of all that has been claimed or boasted, is a genuine sorrow. It will never come again. There has not been light, genuine light, for 10,000 years. Vorx should know. He witnessed it, the original blaze of hope being extinguished by the doomed Warmaster at the behest of gods he now serves. So this pain must end. This delusion must end. Better to prosper in darkness than batter away at some false dawn like a shroud moth on a lantern. The final movement is neither fast nor deceptive. It is just unstoppable. Vorx thrusts his scythe point first, turning his hands and wrenching the curved blade upwards. It hooks under Zidius's breastplate, bites deep, and keeps on going, bursting his primary heart and slicing open his lungs. Vorx heaves, and the chapter master is hoisted from his feet. Vorx twists, holding him up, feeling the blood gush down the shaft and splash on his gauntlets. Zidius spasms, struggling to make his limbs work, to fight back, to control the hammer that he still grasps tightly. Unbelievably, for a moment, he almost makes it. He almost gets in a final blow. Then, inevitably, he fails. His arm goes limp at last, and the thunder hammer crashes to the ground. His helm is the last to drop, held shiveringly rigid to the end. Gently, Vorx lets the body down. He pulls Exact's blade out slowly, doing no more damage to the already ruined armor than necessary. Zidius collapses, his head lolling. Vorx bows stiffly over his corpse and offers him the old salute, the one that the barbarians used to offer the honorable slain in the days before decay ate its way through all the old protocols. Then he turns to Clado. By the time Vorx lowers himself cumbersomely over the prone form of his surgeon, Clado is struggling hard to breathe.
What kept you?
Clado rasps. Vorx dips his head closer. He sees that Clado will live, if he is allowed to. The old resilience, the mark of the Legion, runs through all of them. You have to deal out so much punishment, so much extravagant violence to end the Death Guard.
I know, says Vorx,
allowing himself at last to shoot a little poison into the words. Clado has the gall to look bewildered. His bloodshot eye flickers. The red saliva at his ruined mouth foams.
What do you know?
Vorx bends a little lower, so that his helm's crusted grill is next to Clado's ear.
I know it was you, he hisses. You bastard, Clado. I know it was you who moved the ship.